is the podcast to the show. You can listen to or know.
Welcome to our Ted Lasso talk, the Tedcast. Welcome all Greyhound fans. Welcome all you sinners from the dog track and all the AFC Richmond fans around the world. It's the Lasso way around these parts with Coach and Boss. Without further ado, Coach Castleton.
Okay, welcome back, beautiful people. Today we're exploring Ted Lasso, Season 2, Episode 11. This is part two of our continuing coverage. I am your host, Coach Castleton. And with me, as always, is Coach Bishop.
This is my microphone. When Coach Castleton bought it for me, ownership transferred to me.
Is it like a little emasculating to have another man buy a microphone for you, or?
Well, no. Sometimes my mom bought me microphones. Oh God, gotta go.
it's actually more harsh when we do. When you're like, oh yeah, that doesn't feel good at all. Yeah, my mommy also, but
Mom. Oh, all right, sorry. Moving on.
Yeah, with us is our boss Emily Chambers.
I would like to point out we actually made it 6.5 minutes, not 4.5 the way that I thought. So that's like, it's huge. That's huge for us.
Six minutes per episode. We're not good at this.
Take it easy there. Mm-hmm. Slow down.
Mm-hmm. Where we left off yesterday, we had just had Beard confirmed that Roy's eyebrows were psychotic. This is one of those episodes where... You know, it's like an unintentional sort of result of focusing on eyebrows was that there was a lot of talk about Keeley's eyebrows, weirdly. So it's funny because when we started this season, I said to you guys, hey, did you notice like the makeup's a lot thicker this season? Like there's a lot more makeup.
Oh, that's right.
When you're in it, you sort of don't notice. But if you go back to season one, you'll go, like, Keeley looks like, like a student film that doesn't have enough, like doesn't have a crazy makeup budget. That's, you know, funny. What I mean? Mm-hmm. And then now it's like they're doing all the contouring. It's real thick. But it's funny. A lot of people sort of, the commentary about eyebrows with Roy sort of lended itself to migrated somehow to Keeley and the makeup job that they do on Keeley's eyebrows. It's not something I personally noticed this particular episode, but that's where we left off. And when we pick it up, we are looking at a four shot. I really love the coach four shot. I'm just going to, the prefix four can get you into trouble in certain ways, but I was mindful of the fact that I was looking at you guys to watch you watch me fuck up, but I'm just saying the four shot, to avoid any phrasing jokes, is sort of an iconic Ted Lasso shot. Now it's the, you know, the coaches in line, Ted and Beard in the middle, Roy on one side, Nate on the other side. I was noticing that I just plain like that shot, and maybe it's like the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Maybe it's just the, you know, we know these characters or whatever, but I, as we open on this particular episode, I just want to call that out, that it's somehow weirdly comforting to me.
Nothing. I don't even, what were you afraid you were going to screw up in the four shot? Like, that's one of those where I don't even know enough to know what I should be worried about.
No, I just think certain provocative words have four, but F-O-R-E as their prefix, and I could see myself accidentally stumbling into that nest of snakes.
You were afraid you were going to say foreplay?
Yeah, that's naughty. Hoo-wee! Oh, can't believe you said that online. Man.
Because I know someone's getting canceled. I know all of the swear words. And
it was actually
the
foreskin
things.
That I was kind of thinking.
Foreskin?
Yeah, oh, foreskin. I was like, oh, that's going to be a foreskin thing.
No, but I'll file that for sure.
I mean, that's just like...
one of my friends once asked me...
I mean, in fairness, it did make the cut. Hello!
There you go. We got
that. That's terrible. Terrible. I had a friend who asked me, hey, what do you think? A little boy asking what my thoughts on circumcision were. And I proceeded to just, you know, sort of lay out some of my thoughts. And in the context of it, I didn't realize that I was unintentionally insulting my friend because I haven't been around untrousered before, and I wasn't meaning to, but just like my natural sort of feelings on it.
You don't like turtlenecks.
I'm not saying anything about that. I'm not saying where my hey, listen, I want everyone to have the pecker they want, boss. You know, I mean, this goes back. Okay. What a terrible episode. All right. Thanks, everybody. I think we should just pack it in right now.
I love that you keep driving into various ditches. Like, actually, you cannot put this one on.
It's the latent pressure.
Exactly. And you're, it's like when you stare at, they say, like, if you stare at that rail when you're driving, like, you'll eventually crash into it. I think that's where you
are. That's what
right
it's like
now,
working with the two of you. I just want you to know that. Eventually, you're going to send me off the cliff.
I'm not speaking about foreskin itself in this, but the word foreskin is the least sexy thing that's ever existed. There's
seriously.
It is ironically a boner killer. It's so bad to hear and say foreskin.
All I'm thinking about is ways you could wreck a hookup by using the term foreskin actually, no matter what you do, if you say it out loud, you shouldn't even utter it.
Sex has to leave the room when that word is there. As soon as foreskin shows up, sex is like, well, I gotta bounce.
I got places to be.
Yeah, and it's with the word foreskin.
Nope.
Oh, baby.
Nope.
Nope.
What do you say? What do you say?
I love it. Boss was like, everyone has their limits, and we've just reached mine.
Good day, sir. Good day.
I'll take my headphones off. I will.
God, Jesus. I like the coaches. We'll see how long that lasts. We open with.
I wanted to say quickly, Coach.
Go,
I feel a little weird because I'm now not going to be remember the name of it. But the way they are arranged, there's a classic. There's a reason you like this shot, and I don't know if they've done it each time. I'd have to go back. But there's a classic. What's the right word? There are classic ratios that you can have within the frame. And I'll see if I can find this, but where they have those three and then where he is, there's like a wider one that's like 2/5. And it's an actual thing, like shows up in paintings. And my brain won't give me the actual name, but now that I'm looking at it and you had the reaction you did, I think there may be a reason why like your eye finds this particularly pleasing.
Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about. I wish I knew the concept. I remember working on a film where the director would always try to center actors in the frame, and it would make, so as the A camera operator, he wasn't the DP, but he was the A camera operator who would just naturally frame it up. And he was like he was like a hero. This guy, he'd been in the business 45 years, you know, something like that. Everything, you know, life career A camera operator, and knew his business. And then the director, who at the time was, 20, in his mid 20s, you know, something like that, would be like, hey, can you just like frame it up a little like more central? And you would see the guy, he was like he tried not to react, but you could see his shoulders deflate. Right. You know, he doesn't want to, he's not a jerk. He wasn't trying to show up the director. But
but he's like, you're in charge.
It's crazy how fast a decision like that will go right through the whole set. You're like, oh, the A camera operator's got a problem with the director. You didn't say a word, but you see his shoulders drop or a little bit. And then somebody asks him if he wants like a, you know, Fresca, and he gives him a one word answer. You're like, I think, like, you know what I mean? Now the B camera operator, your whole camera department is whispering, right? It's only a matter of time. So it's crazy. Set is a whole. It's a whole different thing. But anyway,
it's an organism.
You're right. You're very right, Coach. I'm glad you spent $350,000 on film school.
to learn that, yeah. to learn a principle I can't name.
And Bravo.
With that, I take my leave.
Well done. Now, we see them shaking their heads. They're looking at the team, and they must be practicing, and they're saying, hey, their lines are off. They can't maintain their lines. These guys are just not in sync. You know, Ted's
They are the Backstreet Boys.
Oh, right. Yeah, they're not in sync. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. God, I missed that. Yep. That's so funny.
Really? Oh, I thought you were about to complain about it, but okay.
I just missed it. They're not in sync. That's that's super cute. I did not. I'm okay with that. I'm okay. No, that's clever.
Okay.
That's All good. Right. Listen, some wordplay is good. Yeah. I'm not a word fascist. I just don't like crap wordplay. I don't like fucking dad jokes and garbage puns. Okay, so now we pivot. They do this a lot on Ted Lasso, and they do it you know, as well as anybody. We're looking at the coach or looking at somebody, looking at something else past us, past camera, past frame. And then we pivot, and we see now we get like a gimmicky reveal or a, you know, some sort of reveal that gives you a little bump. And coach, what is going on here?
We are rehearsing a performance of Bye 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 that is going to happen for Dr. Sharon. And so Ted jumps in and no. Hey, he blows a whistle. No. Guys, come on. That ain't going to cut it. Y'all got to be together on this. All right. It's like this. You may hate me, but it ain't no lie. Yeah. Like, he's doing the choreography for them. Then the hands. Bye, bye, bye. All right. And watch my jumps. Ain't no lie. See how I'm jumping? Like a marionette. That's why this song is on the album, No Strings Attached. All right. Which I did find myself going, I don't know if I ever knew that, but okay. I certainly wasn't on my mind. Like I went, oh, there was more to that than I remembered.
Yeah.
But okay, sure.
I was like,
that holds up.
This reminded me of Coach when Sean McVay first got the job as the coach of the LA Rams. We were both impressed by the fact that he's a little squirt, right? And I mean, I don't know how tall he is, but he's not as big as your NFL player.
Yeah, he's not. Yeah.
And he would go out there and backpedal with the corners and swing his hips, and he was like, showing guys how to do things. It's funny because in different industries, you know, we talk a lot about how, you know, we're just talking about set, we talk about the film industry, talk about television. You cannot give an actor a line reading as a director. You can't say it like this.
Right.
It's the most insulting possible thing. Like it is not done. That's a way to get bounced out of director school. You have to get the actor there without you know, giving him an example. And but with coaching, it completely, no one's offended. I mean, Ted is showing them how to do the jump and the fist pump. And no one is like, no one's like, how dare you? We're the, you know, our bodies are temples. Mm-hmm. But he does a good job with it. And yeah, I didn't catch the strings attached either. But yeah, here we are. Ain't going to mean Bo Jackson. What did he say about that? What's that Bo Jackson
line? Bo Jackson diddly squat. So there was a little bit of a Bo Jackson, Bo diddly squat.
I see.
He's got a lot throwing around there.
Okay. Ain't going to mean Bo Jackson diddly squat unless you can tell how hard we worked on it. You know what I mean? It ain't the execution. That ain't the gift. It's the effort. Yeah. Okay. You see what I mean? And yeah. Okay.
Did either of you have a reaction to that line? It stood out to me, but I didn't feel like, I love it, I hate it. It just stood out to me as like, that is definitely there intentionally. It ain't the execution. That ain't the gift. It's the effort. I was like, I don't know. Like, again, I didn't dislike it, but it felt very, I felt like I was experiencing a little more writer there than I generally do. And I wondered what I was supposed to take from that.
I noticed it for sure. Boss, go ahead, you go first.
I took away that a woman didn't write that. There's no fucking way. Absolutely not would a woman say like, yes, you want to see how hard I did this. Because that's not what we're allowed to do. Like, If you notice how hard we're working, we're doing it wrong. It's supposed to be flawless. Mm-hmm. Effortless. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's so true. That is a thing, right? I mean, that is a standard for women. I would not have thought of that, but okay.
Yeah, thanks. Glad I asked. Thanks, boss. Thanks for sidetracking this and making it about women.
Yeah. We're just trying to have a nice group of men.
This is we're trying to have a little boy time, for Christ's sake.
From a boy band.
Yeah.
A lot of men on men type of action here.
This is true.
Yeah.
This is true.
That's it.
No getting around that.
No, you're right. Yes, I'm sure a woman didn't write that. Coach,
also what he said.
I read it as being process oriented instead of goal oriented. But we talked about on this podcast, we talked many times about the biggest indicator of future success is effort, not grades or not, your pedigree or your money or whatever. That's historically, that's what the studies say. I thought he was alluding to that type of thinking. But I thought, oh yeah, what good is the effort unless you pull it off? That's where you see the effort is by the execution. So, or through the execution. Anyway, as this moment happened, the guys are nodding along, like, okay, we got it. And all of a sudden, like, what's happening?
Well, obviously, as is allowed, a convoy, black SUVs, some motorcycles, and eventually something coming down from the sky appear on the field because, sure. Like, if you're going to have that happen, you wouldn't want to notify the people that might be on the field while that's going to be occurring.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty nutty.
I'll tell you that, like, the super fine ass security detail that popped out of those Range Rovers, I'm like, can we get a spinoff? I don't know who you are, madam. But it was like, you and your friend are a super knockout, right? I was like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. It did make you go like, okay, that's a choice. Like, that is definitely a choice that was made. Okay.
Yeah. General, what's her name? I don't know. It's very cool. And then we get this a helicopter lands on the field. And what does it say on the side of it, boss?
A KUFO.
Yeah, a KUFO.
It doesn't have the name Edwin scrawled in crayon on it quite yet. So this might have been his recently departed father's helicopter. That's funny. It will eventually. He's going to put his name on there. But right now it's just a KUFO.
Yeah, I mean, geez, it's a hell of an entrance.
Lil Akufo, if you will. Yes.
I'll never understand the fascination with we were talking about rapper names the other day in my family, and it's like, rapper names is cool because like the president, you get to pick your call sign name. Like, when you're president, you'd be like, oh, my call. But if you're a rapper, you're not like, my name is like Fred Murray. You're like, yo, my name is whatever. Or DJs. DJs also get to pick a new name. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Yeah. But I'm always amazed by how many have Lil in them, because I grew up hating the convenience store Lil Peach. You know Lil Peach?
I don't.
Oh, Lil Peach was like a, I don't know, I guess it didn't get out to where you are, but there was a chain of convenience stores called Lil Peach, and it used to make me, I'm like, I hate Lil. I hate it.
Wait, did you hate the convenience store or just the name?
No problem. It was like any other convenience store. I hate the name. So okay. I just don't like Lil in general. And usually I don't like, I try to hold that grudge. I kind of continue it against singer-songwriters, rap/rapper/hip-hop artists who have Lil. But I do, I have a sort of a Lil thing for Lil Nas X. So, you know.
Well, sure. Everybody should. Also, I'm slightly disappointed that you don't have outward rage towards a convenience store chain. I was hoping for it. We're not going to get
it. It's something I would do. Yeah, I'm that dumb.
That would be absolutely wild. I'm sorry. Listen, I know that there's no reason for me to pick this fight right now. It's not against you guys. Don't worry. What I will say is that as much as I might love New Yorkers and possibly one day like the city of New York itself, it's fucking wild to me that New Yorkers think that they invented bodegas. Like, I one time, it's so fucking weird. Like, guys, every place has that. Everywhere has that. Somebody tweeted something about, like, where do people that don't live in New York get their toilet paper and beer and some chips or something else? I'm like, we have gas stations. Like, what are you talking about? There's a corner store all over the fucking place. So anyway, I was hoping maybe you had some additional lore to add to my feelings on convenience shops and how people feel about them.
It's food for thought though, boss. I'm definitely going to think about that. I know there's a big uproar in my area when some of the local convenience stores here in white America were purchased by foreigners. And that was like, and I was like, well, that's how I, you know, living sure, in cities yeah. or whatever. I'm like, oh, what? That doesn't faze me a bit. But it was like a real, you know, having like the local Five and Dime Five and Dime refers to a supermarket, right? That's sort of a supermarket, right? Yeah. But the local, your local,
I have no idea.
You know, you'll have like a local general store out in the boondocks here where it's always been in the whatever family. And then now you have a stranger behind the desk. Really, we got people's, stuck in people's craw. But the key takeaway here is Edwin Akufo coming out of the like that's got to be a like what $2 million helicopter. It's like one of those fancy, sleek,
I would imagine, yeah,
I mean, pointy helicopter.
When one has their own, I'm sure the seats in there are not, you know, what some ranger would be jumping off of,
right? Yeah. So lands in the middle of the field. Out comes this character, Edwin Akufo, and Sam Richardson is the actor playing him. Now, Sam Richardson is still relatively he's big, but he's relative. I can still see people not knowing who Sam Richardson is. And someday,
for sure,
someday he will be. And my prediction is he will be like some of these, you know, superstars that we say. Like, you know, you'll watch this 20 years from now, and you'll be like, Jesus Christ, this bit role was played by Sam fucking Richardson. You know how many Oscars that dude has? Like.
Right.
He's just right. Everything he does, he kills it. He kills every single role, every time.
I wonder if yes, he kills. I mean, and he's funny in, I will say it is hard to be funny in a range of ways, like fundamentally hilariously funny.
Yes.
And we've seen him in Veep be one kind of funny. We see him here being a totally fucking different brand of funny. Like, it's a... So anyway. So yes, all the talent. I wonder with him if he'll be the person who is in 50 of your favorite movies.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Sure. Like, just actors who, like, not necessarily that it was ever like, oh, such and such in the Sam Richardson show, but just like, then he had the season that he was on this and was brilliant. And, he was in this movie and he was brilliant. I don't know. I'm trying to think of a good comparison, but those people you look at and you go like, oh, they were never a movie star, but every time I saw them, I knew I was seeing a good movie.
Or
I knew, like, they did a great job.
It's his generation's James Cromwell. James Cromwell being the king of that guy.
Yes, that guy. Exactly that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's good. Yeah, he is. He's like, he's super tough. In the After Party, he plays a tool. Plays like a total dork. Like a no self-esteem. Like, you go, he can do anything. That's all I'm saying. He can do anything. He's one of those guys. And also, I think certain people, and maybe they should have a DJ name or a president name. Before I forget, if you guys were president, what would your call sign be, boss?
I got nothing. I got nothing good. I one of the best things that's ever happened to me is years ago before pandemic, when we were working in the office every day, I was walking down a street in Chicago to go pick up my lunch. And I am going to, based on just appearance and voice, assume a gay man. I believe he was gay. He wasn't like, here's my marriage to another guy, so I don't know that for sure, but I'm guessing he seemed like a gay man. and he shouted, "Work, ginger bitch," in a way that restored my life up until this point. Like, it has sustained me
work
throughout that time. Bitch. Yeah. Work, ginger bitch. So maybe some combination of that, just ginger bitch, maybe ginger would be bitch, yeah. Ginger bitch.
Ginger bitch is on the move.
Yeah. Actually, I do like that.
That actually, you know what? Cool. I was on the fence right up until you gave us a little of that Secret Service action. I was like, oh, hell yeah.
That's what it is.
Like, I'm ready to be like the campaign manager just so we can have that fucking moment. Ginger. And I never use the word bitch. And suddenly I'd be like, no, it's allowed now.
It's allowed now. It does.
It kicks ass over here. I'm just letting
that's
you guys
right.
know.
That's my quarterback.
Ginger bitch is on the move. That's my quarterback. Exactly.
What about you, Coach?
I don't have a good one. I was searching as that was going. I thought something in the Hulk Bruce Banner area, but you know that doesn't quite work. So yeah, I don't have a great one quite yet. I will see if we come across one in our conversation. I'll call it out.
Well, there are certain actors. There are a couple. Running backs, and I always joke with Coach, and I'd say this guy would have the biggest contract if his name wasn't like Melvin Gordon,
right?
You know what I mean? Like,
you're like, God, Melvin Gordon.
Yeah, he can't be good.
No. We don't want to talk to the accountant. Who's the running guy?
Right. That's what I'm saying. And you get guys like Sam Richardson and Craig Robinson, and you're like, no, these guys should have names like Cher. You know, they're that. Every time I see them, they make me happy. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I wish we could catapult them to faster stardom. But anyway, he is fantastic, and he gets out of the helicopter, goes through all the wind shear there, and hustles out with another gentleman in tow, and goes right up to the team, jogs it in, right, as is appropriate for a sporting event, and.
It seems like he's jogging, and it seems like the security guard behind him is walking at a brisk pace. So, like,
not needing to jog to do it. Yeah.
This is kind of like when my 4-year-old nephew jogs next to me. Like, I'm not jogging. That's his version of it, but it's not for real people.
Yeah, I get that. Well, he's got a stockier frame, and the gentleman with him is more has a rangier sort of thinner build. So, you know, those. I have a brother-in-law who's 6'5", and I am not. And
I am not.
So sometimes when we're walking together, it's about four paces to his one. But so they come in, they get into the scrum.
Let me toss this in real quick, Coach, because I do think it actually matters. I hadn't thought of it until you just call that out in terms of their frames. This is a classic. You know, we always talk about the classic joke structures they use. But this is a classic body type. This is Laurel and Hardy. This is Abbott and Costello. This is like these two. These two, that's like a classic visual of this pairing will be funny.
That's it. Endomorph and ectomorph.
Nice.
Think of that?
You're right.
I don't even know if those are valid anymore. That used to be. They had mesomorph, ectomorph, and endomorph.
I was going to say mesomorph. And it was,
You're like a meso. I'm like an endo. Boss is a dragon.
Oh. I was going to go mighty. She's mighty a morph.
Fucking ginger dragon that spits fire.
Yeah.
You're right. Abbott and Costello is a great example. They pop in right into the center of the training. I was my apologies. I was told your training would be finished by now. I don't necessarily believe that for a man that really working around the team schedule, huh? Like a man that'll just land in a field. Oh, that's okay. Hakuna Matata, right? Ted says, and. There's some light chuckles, and he goes, "Oh, I'm sorry. That was kind of racist, wasn't it?" Yeah, you think?
I love it, though, because I love that I believe if this person had been from Finland, he still might have said Hakuna Matata, but then because of who he's talking to, he's like, I should not have said it now. I don't think he said it because of that. I think he just realizes that saying it is problematic. Maybe
I thought he was connecting Africa, African themes, but
oh, you did because yeah. I was like, I guess, yeah.
In, okay. Here's although, the thing: when you go to white people school, and then they teach you how to talk to black people, the first thing they show you is The Lion King. They just go, listen, just start with the Hakuna Matata,
and then we'll be back. We'll be back in an hour and 45.
That's it, kids.
Yes.
Orlando, can you come it's with me? Can you step out of the room with me, please?
The Lion King taught us everything we needed to know about Africa. And yeah, Terminator 2 taught us how to speak in Spanish. Because we could all say, hasta la vista, baby.
Hasta la vista.
Also, the Lion King, Lion King taught us everything we didn't know about feminism. Because, you know, Simba just takes off, and then the women do everything, and he does nothing, and smokes a lot of weed, and then they save his ass, and he gets to come back and be king. Anyway. Okay.
All checks.
So, you know, Timon and Pumbaa are cartoons, he says. I love the how he's, you know, so he's going to start off.
Another pairing like this, by the way.
Yes. There you go.
Like this. So I'll let it slide. He says, hey, I appreciate you. So you must be Edmund Akufo, huh? Yeah, I am. I'm Ted Lasso. Ted goes to shake his hand. And what does he say here, coach?
He lets him know that he does not shake hands. And but, you know, if he does want to shake hands, he can shake Francis's hand. Francis is our long, lean, not needing the jog friend, and who gives quite the handshake, quite the pound. Got a lot of movement, a lot of warmth, intentional, quality stuff. And Ted definitely appreciates it. That is one of the best handshakes I've ever handshook right there. Which, if there's a way to say that sentence that Ted would choose, that is it.
Yeah. And if you are visually challenged enough to have the subtitles on, which I usually am, also because I don't want to miss any lines, you will see that as he does the world's best handshake, Francis is speaking Twi, which is a variety of the Akan language spoken in southern and central Ghana by several million people. So how's that for a little lesson in linguistics?
There we go. Apparently one more thing that we need to learn about Africa. See, and that's good enough.
Can you imagine they didn't get it all in The Lion King?
Nobody gives a shit about Africa. Now,
for the U.S. educational system, that's all you need. You don't need any more.
That's all you need. I've learned all I need to know in from one movie.
We're done here, right?
Also, it's not exactly the same, but I'll never be able to watch this scene without thinking of Key and Peele having Obama do the handshakes with various white people.
That is the best. The white people go in for the hug, and he holds them off and goes,
hold up. Yeah, no. The truth of it is so funny, though. Like, I don't know, like, where they were when one of them was like, but wait, watch what just is happening. Because as soon as it started, I was like, oh my God, I know what they're doing. And that is hilarious. But I'd never thought about it in those terms before. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
Absolute classic. Good. White people have been doing it forever. We just don't, we're not as physical about it. You know what I mean? It's like, I'll get your kid into college. I'll give him his first job, or, you know, I'll marry your pretty daughter, your brain dead pretty daughter, off to a man with means or whatever. You know, we've been doing it forever.
Whatever the head nod
is. Yeah, whatever the kicking a door open for another white person. It's so funny. The button on that little sketch. You're like, okay, is this going to, it was funny. It was just him doing that. Just like skip a white person, shake, you know, polite to a white person, then hug a black person. And then he gets to someone of mixed race. And that was the button where he's like, kind of like checking him out. Like, my mom is black or whatever. Yeah, whatever it is on my mother's side. I forget. And he's like, all right, bring it in.
Like something crazy, they call him my octoroon or something like that.
Yeah,
something really crazy.
Yes.
And it was like, oh my God.
Yes.
Like, oh my God.
That's exactly what happened.
That is so funny.
I just want to point out in this podcast, we got dialects, we got mesomorphs, and we got peckers. So
Accurate.
Hope everyone's got their bingo cards out. Okay, so Francis gives this he's got this great sideliner who apparently gives the best. That was one of the best handshakes I've ever had. I've handshook right there. Firm yet comforting, you know, like a weighted blanket for my hand toes. Which I don't like
feet. Easily Boss's favorite line in the series.
Like, hand toes. Toes for fingers, I don't like it. I don't like the imagery.
I don't like any of it.
So I bet you're looking to chop it up with Miss Welton, yeah? If that's not impossible, well, you say impossible, but all I hear is I'm possible. I'm like, okay, Ted, settle the fuck down. Like, it's England. It's just really simple to, oh my, yeah, she's up. You'll find her on the third level, like the lounge.
Yeah.
Let me direct you to the stairs. I'm possible. Ted chuckles. You know, Akufo gives him a look. Oh, it makes more sense when written down. Ah, yeah, okay. All right. Okay. He says, take it from here. Beard says, if it's got to be me. Okay. That's it. They zip.
Wait. If it's got to be me, you know that that's the it's going to be me, right? We're still on the NSYNC thing?
No, I just
it's gonna be me. Second single off of No Strings Attached. Also a wonderful thing. Yes, a great thing to post on April 30th. It's going to be May. Just Justin Timberlake's terrible hair and him saying it's going to be May.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay. No, this is good. See, these are little insights that this is what keeps the lights on, boss. All right. Greyhounds.
It's like the leaves changing, but with the perm.
Oh, my God. Fucking Justin Timberlake. I wasn't even going to yell. There's so many things that white men have done this week that I was like, I'm just fuck it. I don't fucking care anymore. Goddamn fucking Justin Timberlake. What a little bitch. What a stupid son of a bitch. I fucking hate that guy. I'm so angry with him.
I'm so happy right now. I am so happy.
What is happening right now?
Justin Timberlake has always been a little bitch, and we didn't know that. He was terrible to Britney. He was terrible to Janet. He was terrible to a bunch of other ladies. And then he wanted to be like, oh, but I'm just a nice guy. I just want to, like, play country music now, and I sing with my guitar and some bullshit. And just be married to Jessica Biel. Stop trying to act. I don't care for that whatsoever. Britney's memoir came out, and she said some shit about Justin Timberlake, but also he was a fucking asshole. And, like, when you dated somebody in your early 20s and you were an asshole, they're gonna remember it. So then they're gonna have to talk about it in their memoir. And then white Michelle Williams is gonna need to do an impression of Britney doing an impression of you trying to talk to a black guy, not sounding that great. And when people talk this shit, just shut up and sit down and go away. But instead, he played some fucking show where he said, I'm going to apologize to fucking no one. And I'm like, well, you're still a little bitch. You're 43 years old. You have children. You've been married for like 20 years. You're still a little bitch. Fuck that guy. Fuck that guy forever.
That seems...
I don't know about anybody else, but I feel like I just got like a spiritual cleansing. I just feel like... Whoo! All right. I'm ready for the weekend. Let's go.
Fucking
shit.
I don't know if I'm on this. God, I don't know if I'm on this train, boss. I get it. I've heard all that and I've read everything. And it seems like, but I'm like, oh man, 20. Yeah, we were all so dumb in our 20s. Like, I'm not sure we're smart now.
That's
but,
fine. You can be dumb in your 20s. Yeah, but then what you need to say as a 43-year-old father of two children is, yep, I was a fucking dumbass. I wish I hadn't done a lot of those things. But I'm going to sit down and shut up now.
Here's the thing. When you say that, then it gets – the media takes and runs and goes, he confirmed that he was abusive. And you're like, wait, no.
That's the whole thing.
It's so binary. Look, you're like, I hate this guy. I can think of 40,000 people I hate more
than
Justin Timberlake. I mean, he's just like, okay. Well, like, if anything –
I love that you also this mean is like that's the, this great. Is like the like Tom you mean Bur- that's great, I'm not worried about it, and also that's great, I'm happy that the number is that high.
Well, no. I'm like, remember when I talked about Tom Brady and everybody's like, fucking hate Tom Brady. I'm like, he is not worth it. Like, he's such a – like, he's just – he's like he would be like a dorky kid that lived next door if he couldn't throw a football. And I feel the same way about Justin Timberlake. Like, the big thing is the sad takeaway from this whole thing – you know, and you look at how he came out scot-free of things like the malfunction of the Janet Jackson thing. Right, wardrobe malfunction, and the he didn't come out of Britney scot-free because we didn't know about it till recently, whatever. So now that's just, you know, I don't think people knew about it once upon a time. But the lasting impression I get is like, oh, he's not, you know, he wants to be a lot cooler than he actually is. And that seems like enough of a prison of itself. I will say this. I know you don't like him as an actor, but I do think he's a talented comedic actor. And I think like when he's on SNL, he does a good job. He's got good timing. And if you like that, then it works. And so I will just say that.
But I think, well, I think definitely the infamous or famous or whatever classic Dick in a Box, I think, you know, will go down in history. That was one of the funniest fucking things.
That is fair. I will give him that.
Holy shit. But I do think there's something about the guy, and I feel like I've had enough women talk to me about it. So I'm checking with you, if this is where you are right now. The guy who's super invested in I'm a nice guy, so he never admits that anything he did didn't fit into that. Like, whereas I think it's possible to say, hey, I'm a fucking grown up now, and obviously I don't condone my own behavior. Like, I don't condone that behavior, but I think the vibe is more like, why you got to bring up old shit? And then I think people are like, wait a minute, you don't get a fucking pass.
Yes. Yeah. No, I absolutely, everything that you just said. Also, Castleton, it's not that I don't hear where you're coming from. It's that there's two points of misunderstanding and miscommunication that I cannot believe over our years of friendship I have not made clear to you. Number one is that...
Is this the Led Zeppelin thing?
No. Oh. Is it that Led Zeppelin only has three good songs?
According to you, yeah.
I only got three good songs. I mean, they're fine.
Yeah, no, it's okay. No, listen, just be wrong in your wrongness.
That's fine. So number one is that him being sad that he's not that cool is in no way a reflection of him making up for the shitty things that he did to a bunch of women. Like, he just feels bad. And we're supposed to think like, oh, well, Tom Brady would be a schmuck, except actually he's a billionaire and the most famous football player in the world. Like, I don't care if Justin Timberlake feels bad that he's not as cool as he's supposed to. I want him to apologize for the shitty things he did and act like a grown-up moving forward. That's number one. Number two, I hate as easily as I breathe. Saying he's not worth it. Yeah.
No, that's true.
Saying he's worth it implies that there is some cost to me to hate Justin Timberlake. It flows through me.
That's right. So I forgot easily. About that. Yeah. No. It's like a gentle
It's a gentle mist.
There's no friction.
Like nothing.
Yeah.
I know that it might sound weird that I say like I have no attachment to him. I just hate him. But that is it. It doesn't. It is no burden.
That actually makes more sense. And maybe I don't know the depth or the breadth of his transgressions with Britney. I try to because I try to stay out of certain things that just like not all that interested in them. But then your children get into them, and then you sort of like, you know, you just want to be with it enough to have a thought about it. And also, I never wanted to be the person who's like, I have no idea what you're talking about some like cultural thing. So I don't realize. It sounded like what he was unkind and emotionally abusive to her, but I didn't know, and that right there is grounds to apologize. I'm not taking his side. I'm saying I totally get it, and it makes more sense to me when you say, oh, no effort to hate, because for me it would mean I would have to think about it a little bit, you know.
It feels like the pop culture / public version of the there is no us conversation.
Yeah, yes, right. Yeah.
Because I'm probably much closer to you, boss, where I'm like, oh, I can't stand this one. That one makes me sick. And fuck him.
Wait, did you guys ever like him? Did you ever like him so that now this is a change? Because I didn't ever care one way about it. I never.
That could impact it. I liked him more before. I thought that. I was kind of disappointed in his reaction to all this. I don't know. It didn't piss me off the way it pissed Boss off, but it definitely made me go like, oh, really? Like, you still don't get it? But I've had that moment with several stars.
Yes.
So I always wondered why it was such,
where I'm like, really? You still, really?
I always wondered why it was such a big deal. So I'm like, as a solo artist, I'm like, do I know a good Justin Timberlake song? Like, that's all
Sexy
Back
Slams.
I mean,
come on.
Yeah, he had
Sexy
Back.
Sexy Back?
Yeah.
I mean, that shit was huge.
Yeah, not my jam. But I get it. You know, I get it. It's catchy. I get why. But that's one. That's okay. Okay, great. One song. One song got Tracy Chapman kicked out of you know, the music world for 30 years.
Oh,
you know,
false. False.
I know.
Number two, she has a catalog. Like,
no. Oh, I know. For sure. I was thinking about this the other day because we talked a lot about Tracy Chapman. I'm like, I was humming it. I'm watching it on a loop. And I'm like, you know, when you watch it, she is so beautiful. And her smile is so radiant. And I'm like, what? This should be like the person running the planet. Like, you're just like, I like her so much. Where did she go? And I always say the reasons are always more boring than you think they are. And it's probably like, okay, well, you know, she toured for a while and then got expensive and, you know, whatever. And then I actually don't know. So I'm speaking out of class, but I think, okay, you say, her, I love, and we'll die on that hill. Him, I'm like, okay, he's got one. You say one song for sure that is excellent. And then the rest, all those other hits were with the bands, right? With boy bands, basically.
Nah, I mean, I hear what you're saying, but he was a pretty big pop culture deal.
But were the songs might good? Not have been on your radio. I'm saying objective. Yeah, no, I know he got
like,
a bunch of
like,
things.
No, no one's accusing him of being Stevie Wonder. No, but like he had songs with Pharrell. I don't know. I'm not like versed like that, but he had songs with Pharrell. He had shit with Jay-Z. I mean,
let me say this.
Pretty fucking.
Do you know
huge.
When you see an artist and you go, huh? Seems like everything around them is bigger than the actual talent of them. If that makes sense, like their machine is like gigantic. But like when you get down to the nitty gritty and you're like, he used to play SNL and then he would be the musical guest and the host. And I would listen to the music and I'm like, I don't even like the bass. there's nothing going on here. And anyway, that's just whatever. It's just one person. But yeah, again, I probably never cared either way. And so I don't feel as let down by, you know, the current situation to say.
So here's one thing that I'm going to say, because you and I have had, obviously, since we just talked about Tom Brady, and you mentioned that you talked about Tom Brady previously with me, and you're like, you don't have to hate him. I think a couple of the things that you said, one is that he would need to come out and say like, oh yeah, I'm sorry because I was abusive, and then he would need to confirm his abuse or whatever. I don't buy that. I don't think that that's actually true. I think that if he came out and he was like, oh yeah, I was 20 years old, I was a pop star, I was a fucking asshole, I fucked up a lot of shit, and I'm trying to be a better person now, I don't think people would be like, Justin Timberlake confirms that he murdered 4 children in the middle of the night. No, like, I think most people would actually be able to handle that. I think the other thing is, it has become such an issue of how do we feel about the star, the famous person? Do we like them? Do we not like them? Are they problematic? Are they not problematic? That it becomes this sort of like, you have to take a stand on how you feel about Martha Stewart. I'm not saying you need to hate Justin Timberlake. I'm not saying a thing for me is my friends and I all hate Justin Timberlake, and anybody who likes Justin Timberlake, I'm not friends with them because they're bad people. None of that. Like, you don't have to have any feelings on Justin Timberlake. I will say that, what's that? Don't Act Like It's a Bad Thing. That song slapped too. Like, he does have a couple. He definitely does. He has.
Was it just him though? Solo song, yes. Not like with somebody else.
Nope, that was him.
Okay, yeah. No, okay.
All I'm saying is that he's got as many good songs as Led Zeppelin. I'm gonna say that. That feels totally comfortable for me.
There should be a lightning bolt hitting you right now. There should be a. The sky should open. This is proof that there's no God, because you would be stricken from the planet.
I'm so happy.
Such blasphemy. My God, I can't believe that came out of your mouth, but I love it.
Yeah, obviously. But either way, I'm not saying that this is like a sort of moral litmus test for anybody. I'm saying I think the guy fucking sucks. And I think Tom Brady fucking sucks. And he tried to use COVID funds to sell people vitamins that were supposed to solve COVID during the middle of the fucking pandemic. Fuck that guy. Like, I don't need to fucking like him. Other people can. I don't have a problem with that. Fuck that guy.
I just don't know what all the anger towards white men is from. Like what have we done that's so bad?
I'm on my period. Right.
Where you know they? I mean? What do they do?
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm PMSing or something.
That's got to be it. Obviously. Just can't. I don't know if you're, you know, I hope you just control your emotions and try not to be so shrill on this podcast.
I'll try to be less emotional.
Yeah. can you imagine? Like, that's, it grosses me out to even say. All right. Here we go. Okay, Greyhounds, let's get in formation. Will, here we go. And we kick the bye-bye-bye. Will is holding it in the cell phone. A la Say Anything is what that's what reminded me of. We held that.
Definitely had that. Yeah.
5, 6, 7, 8.
Just a very basic call out of, okay, ladies, now let's get in formation. Since we're doing all of the pop songs, that one is Beyonce.
Yeah.
Fucking good A. Call. That's great.
Yeah. Good call.
Jesus Christ. Way to go, boss. I love it.
Hey, thanks.
So we got a nice camera move. And we see all the dancing. We got some head nods from the coaches. Then they hit the whole thing and they freeze.
Let me tell you something. You know when the credit should be? Also starring Will's hips. Because I laughed so fucking hard. When they are behind him and he is like swaying his hips back and forth to the song, I haven't laughed that hard at something that like is such a side joke. Like it's not even a side dish. Like it's like maybe it's a garnish, and I just thought it was so funny the way he was swaying his hips back and forth.
There is something about watching somebody who can't dance. Try really hard. I'm not saying that Will is not a good dancer.
Right.
But right. He's not showing off a lot. It's the movie Old School, in a bunch of ways, has not held up. And I am not going to be endorsing it necessarily. Some of the plot points.
Imagine. I haven't watched it in years, but I can only imagine. But go ahead.
Oh, man. When my older sister and I moved into a place together, we both, because we were in our 20s and we didn't do things that well, Justin Timberlake, that's how you say that. We didn't get our cable set up right away. And instead, we just had Old School on repeat on the DVD in the background all of the time. So I watched that movie. I like the theme music on the DVD, like menu screen is seared into my brain. And also Luke Wilson can't dance for shit because there's a scene where all of the guys in the fake fraternity are supposed to be doing a dance routine. Vince Vaughn, unfortunately, does nail it. Will Ferrell obviously isn't going to get it. That's his whole thing. Luke Wilson just cannot get it. It's bad. It's hilariously bad. It's so great.
Mm-hmm. You know, I will say that I think it's really nice that a super cheesy boy band song from 2000 has become so entrenched. It's one of those songs where you could be the hardest motherfucker on the block, but you still know the words to this song. You know, like it's that type of thing. And I was just looking at all the songs that came out in 2000 to see what I was listening to, because I was not listening to Bye Bye Bye, and I was That's not. A mistake. I was like, boy bands suck. They're a corporate like they're put together by computer, and they put all these they construct them out of different pieces of the demographics they want to hit to try to get as many girls to fall in love with one of their key people. You know, half the time they can't sing, the songs are terrible. And I was that guy, and I was like, oh, you know, Miss Jackson by Outkast came out that year, Wonderful by Everclear. I was just looking at songs that I was listening to. And yet, you know, years later, it's this sort of cheese bag thing that is still still somehow. Now it feels like nostalgia. Now it feels like I know I didn't give a shit about Bye 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 or NSYNC when it came out. And now I feel like, oh, it's part of the the world that feels treasured. And it's funny. Nostalgia does strange things to people.
I cannot believe that you said a computer put the boy bands together when Kevin Richardson is the first cousin of Brian Littrell. And obviously the two of them together helped form the Backstreet Boys. How is that not organic? How is it that you getting together with your cousin to form the Backstreet Boys isn't like the way that every rock story starts?
Yeah, answer that.
The fuck? Also, I think Bill Lawrence has a special spot for this song because he also featured it on an episode of Scrubs. Talking years later, they're like, no, this song is still great.
I love it. So they finish their rendition. Will's hips stop swaying. They vogue the final pose. And then we have this lengthy, drawn out moment where Beard and his sunglasses, you can't see, like it's this it's like Darth Vader's helmet. You can't tell what his facial expression is. Nate actually looks at him. He's got his arms crossed, does not look happy, and we get a beat. And boss, what does Beard say here?
That was it.
And it's pandemonium on the face. It is like they won a championship. Shirts come off a la Brandi Chastain. You know what I mean? Like, it is like, what is so happening? But you have to respect an environment, a workplace environment where ancillary goals can merit this type of response. I'm leaving it. I was leaving that hanging because I wanted, because what we talked a little bit about Coach and how he operates and the teams he builds and now he's in the process of building his next major victory, and I'm telling you, that's the environment that it's going to be. Not that they're necessarily going to be funny. Dancing,
it's funny because I do. Yes, and I think once that's where you are, it just does show up, right? Like, it'll just show up this way. So I love that that's the vibe. I could 100% see, like, next, you know, they'd be, we never saw it, but in the locker room, there was some ongoing contest between, you know, first team and second team, you know, shooting their uniforms into the laundry basket across the room, or, you know what I mean? Like, it's once that's the energy that everybody's got going. Yeah, I do. I love that kind of stuff. And pretty much anytime you get like some sweet teamwork going on, I'm always like, yes, yes. So I did enjoy that.
I love it. We cut up to Rebecca's office. I cannot tell you how much Akufo is seated across from Rebecca. Rebecca is flanked by her lieutenants, right? I love this. I didn't realize how much I loved it until I'd seen it three or four times. And then I was like, oh, we have this invading army. So it's like, the show, I don't know if the show does a great job of explaining how wealthy Rebecca is, because I think it would alienate most of the audience. Like, this is when we talk about chauffeurs and we talk about things. It would be tough to sort of empathize with some of the way she lives her life. But we have this sort of counterpart of hers coming in, a guy who can land on fields, a guy who the rules don't apply to. He's seated across from her, and the inherent support she has from Keely and Leslie, you just go, wow, this is, I don't know. I just really, really liked the imagery of it.
Well, sort of extending that, because I hadn't thought about that, but you're right. And I think if we had any question as to whether you're right, the fact that the actual centerpiece in the shot is through the window and is his, basically land behind enemy lines helicopter. I think that's great. But also, did you look at the way he is positioned? His posture
how reclined he is, casual posture.
He's not invade. I'm here to tell you how lovely this place is. Invade. Like, I've come to take notes as to how one creates such a wonderful place. You know, like, he's definitely, yes, he's complimenting and, of course, flattery and all the stuff that we say about flattery. But, like, I feel like even his body position says, it's your world. Even if we know he just landed in a helicopter, I feel like he's definitely deferring physically.
I know, for sure. He definitely
is. I think it's BS, but
yeah, well, yeah. That's the thing is, he is an operator, and we're going to come to find that out. By contrast, I think I would put the odds of Higgins straining his butt cheeks by holding them too tightly at about 62%, because he looks
He does not look comfortable.
No.
Yeah, this is not a Caesar Yelena moment at all.
Right. Right. I mean, why might Edwin Okufo be here, coach?
To buy the team,
yeah,
which would mean a lot of things for his life, right? For sure.
Exactly. You might be looking down the gaping maw of the end of your career.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You think
he definitely has a vested interest in how this conversation goes. Yeah.
I mean, it's possible that a Ghanaian billionaire could keep on a mumbling middle-aged white man as his aide de camp, but doubtful. Anyway.
The current
head of football operations. Mm-hmm. Wait, what? That's basically how he feels right now. That's right, boss. So he does start with compliments. He is relaxed. Ted is seated next to him across from Rebecca. Okufo is nothing but congratulatory. I cannot tell you how much I admire what your club has done this season. You know, relegation destroys some teams, but it's only seemed to have made yours stronger.
All right. I did want to speak on that quickly because obviously we see that it is true, but I'm big on this idea. I want to learn more about it. As I've learned about it, I'm just more and more excited of anti-fragility and the whole idea of like creating something that just not that can withstand turmoil, but that is almost is strengthened on some level by turmoil, like by the difficulties. And that's a huge thing in building a team. Like you bring up the other piece, you know, with Black Storm, but I have thought about like, well, what makes an organization that way? Because things will go wrong. And to have a place where you can look at that and respond as a group in a way that makes that true is pretty impressive. But there's a version of this where at the end of season one, Ted gets fired, right? Rebecca's like, you know what? I am going to destroy this thing after all. Like this did not have to go the way it has gone. I like that it gets called out.
Yeah, it's a good point, Coach. And I think, it's not whether or not things will go wrong. It's how people react when they do inevitably.
That's it.
Right? Do you have the culture in place? Do you have the system in place? Do you have the trust in place? Do you have
all those
things? You know, it is crazy. It's funny. We were talking about that in my family. We were explaining because, you know, some people are so resistant to change. And I'm like, I kind of hate the word change. Because it implies that there isn't change. Like, oh, yeah, we don't like change. Like, dude, you are...
Right up until now, there was no change.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's only right this second. So it's a strange concept, but it is how you weather the storm. I love the anti-fragility take. Relegation destroys some teams, but it's only seen to have made you stronger. That's a sign of good organization. That's all because of the boss right here, Ted. I noticed Ted is taking all the credit. Like he's a hog for credit, you know?
Right. Always. Yeah. Always.
Because that's that's the opposite of taking credit. Trickle down economics might stink, but trickle down support smells like pizza. Roses, and I assume Viola Davis.
Again, not by mistake. Whoever made the decision, like, in this writer's room, we honor Black women. Definitely raise their hand. Like, this is the Michelle Obama. Like, there are examples throughout this series. So I very much appreciated that line. I thought that was a cool choice.
I could see where it might be seen as pandering to mention a black woman to a black man. Say like, oh,
I didn't read that, like, but yeah, I guess it's sort of me missing the
No.
I think I'm maybe giving him a little too much.
No. Viola Davis is everybody should have a tattoo of Viola Davis. She's the best person in the world. Yeah, no, that's that. I'm not saying that, but I could see him having like a Pumbaa and whatever Timon and Pumbaa moment here. I do care about this club, Mr. Akufo, very much. Now, Rebecca, in contrast to Akufo's Devil May Care, knee on the desk, partially reclined posturing, what does Rebecca look like here, boss?
She doesn't seem intimidated, but she's also not aloof about this at all. It seems like she is...
Yes.
A weird way of saying it is the victorious side at somebody surrendering almost. There's something about that. Not that she has won anything yet, but like she is not being aggressive. She's not being confrontational. She's not telling him to get the fuck out. But she's not necessarily being like, oh yes, please come in and hang up. But would you like to sit on my side of the desk? Like she's not doing that.
Yes, either. Great point. I didn't think of it, but yeah, you're right. It's very like. I actually am in charge. This is my office. Mm-hmm. This is my team. This is my room. You seem like a very nice man. Here's the answer. Like, oh, okay. Yeah, you're right.
But she is like, okay, so yeah, all that is true. I watch her posture in this. She's very rigid, straight up and down. She's like doing the thing where she sits on a chair, but her back is absolutely straight as a ruler, but she's not leaning on the chair back. You know, it's just like, that's how she's sitting. So there's a certain rigidity to it. And, you know, for me, a guy lands on your field. I start to read my Sun Tzu and I'm like, you know what this is? This is a feint, you know, like this is a military feint. This is him sending sorties to gauge the opposition. And so she's got her fortifications. She's sitting rigidly. She's going to give him, she's the one right now that makes the rules. She is in her home base, right? And he's just relaxing. Yeah. You know, hey, what do you, trying to soften her up. And she says, listen, I'll cut straight to the point. I'll tell you that I'm not interested in selling it. And that's it. That's it. Now she's laid down the law. It's interesting. Interesting dynamic. I was trying to think, how often do we see a negotiation between powerful woman and a powerful man? Then I was like, okay, powerful white woman, powerful black man, powerful English white woman, powerful African, Ghanaian white black man. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, there's so many right? And we don't, it's just interesting. And I think most of us just want to experience all these new things. And so I kind of get into that, when we do the analysis, I'm like, there's a lot cooking here. And he does not miss a beat. Coach, there is no air between her saying good day and him responding. And what does he say?
Oh, I'm not trying to buy your club. And so everyone in the room is like, we're not having the conversation we thought we were having. Oh, I'm interested in buying one of your players, Sam Obasanya. Kaboom! He just launched he just dropped a grenade in this office, like on every level, like on the Richmond on the field level, on the locker room level, on the only two people in this room know what we're about to hear level. Because immediately we get Keely, who doesn't quite have the training and finish that Rebecca has, says blurts more accurately, but Rebecca loves Sam. And of course, then we have to recover. We get to, we all love Sam. Exactly. But yeah, that
Rebecca closes her eyes in pain.
She's like, you said that out loud. Okay. Yeah.
Sam is also an interesting, he's never been the target of all of this sort of attention before. So it's like,
They were going to ship him back home when we met him.
Yeah, like he wasn't going to be good enough. Right. Yeah, he wasn't even, you know, and he's not on defense where he belongs, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But now he's scoring hat tricks. He is, you know, become the face of the team in many ways, along with other players. But it's like, okay, time to deliver all the packages. Load them up, elves. It's Christmas. And then someone comes in and goes, hey, can I get Prancer for a minute? You're like, wait a second. What the fuck? it is so integral to the team, right? It's not necessarily Rudolph, because at this point, he hasn't been that shining star, but right now it's like, oh no, he is a key component of whatever they're building. A lot of this, right?
It shows up in him, right.
We've said many times before that he is like the living embodiment of the Lasso way. He actually lives it without having to have been instructed. He came in doing it, and this is how he was raised and who he is as a person and how he treats people and what he believes. And imagine just sliding that puzzle piece out of the puzzle. It somehow would feel incomplete. Boss?
I think my issue with this scene is that maybe this is where I felt like we saw the writers too much. We were seeing the writing too much. Like, it felt like they were trying to add more plot than was needed. Because if you think about the first season, which I think I am not out of line in saying people had a better reaction to the first season than the second season, and I am not going to say
overall.
And I'm not saying that isn't for good reasons, but in the second season, I felt like there was a lot of plot that we didn't have in the first season. First season was Ted's trying to win games, Rebecca's trying to sabotage the team. Those two things are going up head to head at each other. But that was the plot. This is Rebecca is secretly in love with Sam and can't tell anybody about it. And also Sam is being targeted by another team owner because he might want to get traded. If we had sort of scraped a lot of this off and it was only Rebecca has a team that is in not the Premier League, a team that needs to get promoted. She doesn't have the same amount of money anymore. She has this rising star. Does she need to trade him for the good of the rest of the team? It feels like that is the place where I would have wanted that. Like, watching it the first season, I would have assumed that's where the second season goes, not that you have the extra layer on extra layer on extra layer. And so I didn't need Sam and Rebecca's relationship to begin with. And this leading to this kind of issue made it feel like, is all of this stuff superfluous, or are we going to get to a point where it's like, this is really a major decision that needs to be made. This is a point of contention that we need to have the show resolve.
So misaligned stakes for you where this stuff could have, this could have said like, there's no existential threat to the team that necessitates getting rid of a beloved player.
Would require, I understand that Rebecca is scared that because she and Sam just broke up, and because he is a rising star, and because he wants to play for the Nigerian team someday, like, there is a lot of reason why he might consider leaving. I understand that. But we don't even know if Sam is going to accept the position. Like, we have no idea about any of this yet. It feels like they're upping the stakes when we aren't there with them.
Yeah, I mean, we spent a fair amount of time on, like, well, do you like this? So I actually did like the Sam... I did like the Sam Rebecca story, although I got the complaints, but I thought it was a nice parallel with the Ted Dr. Sharon deal and all of that. I guess I didn't mind that. I will say, as much fun as Akufo will be, I mean, in this episode alone, there was value there, and Sam Richardson, we've all already said we all love him. It did feel... I wondered if I understood the business of all this, if I'd have been like, what? Like, if there was something about it that felt very... I don't know. There was, you know, like, I was fine to go along with it, and I was on for the ride, and sort of felt like, okay, great, let's do it. But part of me did go like, are we sure this is how this would be done, or this is how this would transpire. I don't know, Coach, you would know better than I, obviously, by leaps and bounds. But it did, it felt a little bit like...
because I'm smarter?
Well, that. Mm-hmm. But like Shonda Rhimes specifically talks about in Grey's Anatomy, like she'd literally at points be like, medicine.
Yes.
Yeah, in the script, because she didn't give a shit about that, and fine, we'll fill that in. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it felt a little bit like business for him to be like, oh yeah, I'm gonna do this and I'll pay you a transfer fee. So that took me out a little bit, just not necessarily feeling like they were doing that right, but not that I knew different.
Yeah, no, everyone's got their own take. It didn't hit me at all like that. I will say that I just want a good story. So first and foremost, I want a good story, and season one was just a great story. Stem to stern, start to finish, loved everything about it. Season two, there are places where it has challenges, but I think this is the thing, and this is one of the things that has been a liability for Ted Lasso, and we'll talk about it more in season three. It was so different. It was such a like what Coach and I were attracted to. That it became saddled with the burden of that difference. It became, in the same way Boss would argue, I want to be a good man. And then, so now like the ends justify the means or whatever it is, or you can only see yourself as a good man. You can't see yourself as the gritty, whatever person that before everybody knew you were a good man. So with regard to this particular thing, I can see how there's criticism. I ended up, when I look back on this, the Sam and Rebecca relationship is so, for the same reasons I say, oh, you have a white British woman sitting across from a Ghanaian black man, or whatever, all these different things. The black and white of it with Sam and Rebecca, the young man dating older woman thing, all the topics it brings up, all of the things that it makes you consider in your own life, and you know, and make it gives people talking points and conversation pieces and things that, you know, I wish there were just more of it, because I don't think we'd have as many like hidden racist or now overt racists. But you know, we just like, I just think people, if people have a problem with it, it's like, okay, well, like, what's behind that? Let's talk about it. You know, like, is it that young men shouldn't date older women? Why? Well, oh, because whatever. So anyway, the whole relationship, I think, ended up being like sort of thunderstorm of topics, but also I just liked them. The story worked for me, and I thought I liked them together, and I like the moments they've had, and I liked seeing hot Sam, like the version of Sam where we're like, wait a second, this cutie pie is fucking hot, like, all, you know. So it's all of these things that were stretched by this storyline, and I'm like, okay, that's fine. Does it end up being the type of stakes we need, or do they end up being the type of stakes that we need to satisfy what Boss is asking for, which is like a, you know, crisis that would be your sort of you know, the mainsail of the plot of season two? And no, probably not.
Well, there are a couple. I'm gonna try to get to the heart of this. Sometimes I know in my own experience of writing, there's an idea, right? Like there's an idea I find fascinating for whatever reason. And at one point when I was working on A Dinner for Two early on, like you know, years before it finally got made, it was, I know that a story is a collection of moments. What if a moment is a collection of stories? I kept coming back to that. It was like an itch, man. Like I was like, this is I like this idea. I want to explore this idea. And I remember sharing that with somebody when they were giving me notes. And essentially, I don't remember the exact words, but essentially what they said to me is, that's fine that you find that interesting, but that's not a story. And I do wonder, I like the relationship.
I'm just honest with my feedback, Coach. That's all. I'm just honest with my feedback.
So anyway, that fucking guy. No, but I wonder if some of the things I did like about it may kind of move to that end of the continuum a bit. I wouldn't say are all the way over there, but I liked a lot of the things you said. I liked the idea that somebody who was that if you took away their human avatars, these two who are becoming more and more part of this Lasso way, Richmond way, swirl, get each other. Like, I liked that, and I liked who they were together, and I rooted for, you know, I was rooting for it and all that. But maybe in terms of telling the overall story, it doesn't fit into, if you say, like, what happened when Ted went to London, do you need Rebecca and Sam had sex to tell the story? The answer's no. Though I find myself glad I got that part of the story. So I think I'm recognizing the problem and saying I still enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah.
I guess maybe is what I'm saying.
Yeah, no. And also,
or not even problem, the existence of what you're saying.
Yes. No, I think that's, I mean, you can't have just plot point, or else that isn't a story. That is a narrative of what happened to somebody in their day.
Right.
That's not,
right.
I wouldn't consider that to be storytelling. I mean, do we need some of the stuff that we know about Beard? Like, why does he play chess in his mind with Jane? Like, why is that a thing that they're into? So I'm not saying that there shouldn't be any additional details. It felt more like this was manufactured plot rather than organic plot. I'm not saying that that's bad even. I mean, it is, in fact, a contrived story. It's only that it felt like, I sort of felt like I could see the engine moving on this one. Like, I could see behind the story that they were putting on. And I was like, oh, this is how they're going to bring this to a head.
That comes down to execution. Then I would say that that's a failed execution for them. Because when you get, you know, you want to, you're writing season two, and you go, okay, we want to make sure our core audience loves us, right? We got to give them everything they got from season one, but we have to advance the story. And how are we going to do this? And you could, there's a version of Rebecca dates one of her players, right? And then there's like a breakup. And then, you know, right when Rebecca's thinking about like, oh, do I, don't I get back together with him? All of a sudden the player spikes and other teams are in the hunt and the player is going to leave. There's a version of that where you go, yeah, that's just good. That's just good. Good drama. Like, oh, you know, when you say like, oh, I can't believe on the day I needed to pick up my daughter early from school, my car broke down. It's the same thing. It's like, oh, this confluence of things that fuck you up. And if it's done right, you won't notice it, but this is probably done in enough of a ham fisted way by your standards, boss, that it just didn't land.
And I shouldn't, the only thing I'm actually going to object to is by my standards, because there is some ham-fisted shit that happens in other shows that, because I'm so emotionally attached, I'm like, oh, okay, it's fine that Gretchen and Jimmy did this and you're the worst. Doesn't make any fucking sense. You absolutely would not be fucking doing that, Gretchen. Don't lie to me. I know you better than that, but I'm sort of willing to go along with it. So it might be also that I am not as emotionally invested as I would like to be. And I get that. Like, I don't want to make this I am saying that the show was bad. I'm saying that in this part, it felt like I wasn't sure why. Not that you can't have extras, but I didn't feel like there was a weight to Sam and Rebecca's relationship from a plot point. And so having it now tied here made me feel like, wait, hold on. I needed to be worried about that. That's a thing I needed to be concerned about. I didn't even know about that.
In some ways, you know, and I've mentioned this, but the storytelling in some ways mirrors Ted's way of seeing the place, right? So like, you know, so I think also I can't imagine Ted telling his story, and if someone said, and then this happened, that he'd be like, nobody cares about that part. Like, if that's the part that Matt, right? So I think there's something in the writing of the show that also reflects that. I'm sure what I do think is true is if Ted told you this story, he would include that.
Yes. That's an excellent point. That's, you know, absolutely what I'm saying? True.
Well, now that it's on the table, Coach, I'll point out that you got orange and green behind Rebecca there. Higgins says, Sam is under contract with us for another 3 years. Like, so, yeah, I don't even know where this is coming. Yes, I understand. He says, therefore, I would offer you a generous transfer fee of so much money that people would think I'm crazy and that you've taken advantage of me in a financial, non-sexual way, of course.
Yeah. I had a, when I was watching, we'll see how it unfolds. Obviously, we're going through the episode. When I was watching, I did have a flash of, does this man know something he should not know?
But it was
one of those, like, I think I may be doing too much. Like, sorry, but I thought that was a, yeah, I thought it was an interesting direction for him to take it. I mean, I could see you saying that anyway, but it did make me go like, oh, is he being cute here? So anyway, we'll see how it unfolds.
I could definitely see him having a PI on Sam for the last 2 weeks, for sure.
Well, yeah, no, yeah. Like, yep. Exactly.
That feels like billionaire due diligence. Higgins says, I believe he's making you an offer you can't refuse. Ted says, what here, coach?
Oh, Godfather. I see you.
Yep. Well, I'm refusing an offer he can't make, Rebecca says. Big smile. Is that a quote from the third movie? Ted says to Kufo. I don't know. Yeah.
I love this because it definitely had some, seriously, men think about ancient Rome every, you know, like,
yes.
It had some of that to it because I make Godfather references all the fucking time. Like, all the time, to the point where if Daphne makes a Godfather reference, I, like, lose my shit. I'm like the guys finishing Bye Bye Bye. If Daphne makes a Godfather reference, I, like, lose
You're like chest my bumper.
Shit. Like, oh, my God. So I think it's so funny that Rebecca's like, yeah, well, whatever. Like, the answer's no. Like, I don't even know why we're quoting a movie right now. Anyway, I thought that worked gender wise in a way. It didn't make me go like, oh no, you can't say that. Like, I just think it's a lot of guys I know make a lot of Godfather references. Like, that's just seems to be a thing.
Yeah, I don't make as many, but like, yeah, it's the vernacular of our generation. We quote a lot of stuff all the time, just a lot of quoting in lieu of emotion or closeness. Okay, so we have. Keely says, I just have one question. What club is it that you actually own? It's a good question. That's like that's some Columbo shit right there from Keely. And right. He said, yeah, he's like, who are you buying for? Like, I don't like, that's great. He says, Oh, I don't, at least not one I can talk about yet, but it is a team in Africa. And I figured Sam might appreciate the opportunity to play near his family, you know, his home. That seemed like a barb of sorts because they both like, Rebecca and Keely both kind of looked down when he said that, like as if they were keeping him away. The English, have a proud history of taking things from all over the world and bringing them back to the Royal Gallery. So
if you would send some of that shit from the museum back with them, we appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah.
This is bullshit.
Famously, they just was some, thing where they're going to repatriate a bunch of stolen stuff.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, I'm goofing around, but no, that's a real, yeah, that's a real fucking thing. Yeah.
Well, so Ted says, oh, boss, were you gonna say something or no? No. Well, gosh dang it, no, I wish we had two Sams, you know? Ted, the adults are talking, grown-ups are talking, Ted, just pipe down. yeah, so, he's just missing like the subtle, like he doesn't know that the room just dropped 8 degrees in temperature or raised 8 degrees. You know, he's trying to naturally,
they are like, they're doing a whole dance, the two billionaires. And then Ted comes in and he's like, hey, mind if I tap dance? It's like, yes, actually we do mind if you tap dance. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Because they do, you know what I mean? Like, the negotiation has begun. Like, they realize, like, it's not the negotiation we thought it was. And a negotiation has just begun. And Ted's acting like we're just a bunch of friends sitting around yucking it up about how much we love Sam.
It's partially the Ted Lasso of it all. It's partially ADHD because he says, you know, I wish we had two Sams, one for y'all and one for us. Where are we at with cloning these days, by the way? He's going to totally veer off. Like, where? Sure. Like,
do you know how many Google searches in my lifetime are essentially that moment?
Oh, everyone? Sure. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Them Scottish folks have been mighty quiet on that front for a while. Scottish folks, which means we must be close, right? I don't know. I didn't know what the reference to the Scottish folks was. Maybe it was the cloned sheep.
Dolly, wasn't it? I think Dolly, that was it was a Scottish team that did that.
Was it?
If I remember correctly, yeah.
That's great.
So I understand where you guys are coming from with the ADHD and the tap dancing and the slight mania. There is a small part of me that feels like, and I am, I don't know, this scene didn't do it for me. This is showing a lack of emotional intelligence that I think we didn't see in season one from Ted.
Ooh.
And by that, what I mean is, it is, you can't just be nice to everybody all the time, and that's what you do for all of your emotionality. Like, that doesn't, it doesn't work, because you have situations like this. Like, I talked about how we are no longer a scarcity-based model in terms of economics, but there are still things that have limits. Mm-hmm. For instance, Sam Obasanya is only allowed to play for one team. What Ted needed to do was not say, oh man, I wish you guys had one, and then we had one, and then everybody could get a Sam. And wouldn't that, that's not an answer, Ted. That's what a 4-year-old says when you ask them how they would handle a problem. Like, that's, or, that's so immature that everybody gets a Sam.
Or, counterpoint, this is a sign of Ted's heightened emotional intelligence, because he recognizes, shit, this is awkward. So I'm going to do my Ted Lasso thing and change the subject, because we know, I tell you right now, as a coach, we're not losing Sam Obasanya. So, like, this is a null.
But why didn't he say that? Why didn't he say that?
He did.
No.
Boy, I wish we had two of them. But I'll tell you what, those folks are doing some mouth things with sheep. But hey, Edwin, hey, you ever try them pretzels down at the corner store? Come on.
This is what I'm saying. I'm saying that in season one, when Beard told Ted that Jamie wasn't practicing that day because he was hurt, Ted didn't go out and say, oh, Jamie, I heard you hurt Jamie. I hope we can find a beef for you, wrap it around, or whatever you call it. No, he went out and he fucking yelled at Jamie. He said, like, if you're not running today, then set up the fucking cones, because you're hurt and you can't do it. And now what he's saying is, oh, it's uncomfortable that you're trying to poach one of our rising players. So I'm instead going to make a joke. Instead of saying, like, oh, okay, well, you hurt the lady, get the fuck out.
You can be nice all the time. I know it's hard for someone who describes their existence as walking around in a mist of hatred. I understand when a certain a businessman was elected to the highest office in the land and turned it into a kleptocracy. It's because that businessman could not imagine a world where people had altruistic motives for governance. So of course everybody has stolen. They can't see the forest for the trees. I do appreciate that it would be very difficult to imagine a world where someone is nice all the time, but they do exist.
I would argue they don't.
You would argue people are, there's nobody that's nice all the time?
No. I would argue that what you are positing, what I'm saying in Ted's reaction to this. Okay, so imagine a dude comes to your house tonight, Castleton, and says, hey, listen, I understand that you and Juliana are very happy together, but I'm in love with her. And I want her to be my partner. And it's really mean. It's really unkind. It isn't very nice that you aren't letting her be my partner also. So I'm just going to take her and she's mine now. Is it nice for you to say, like, oh yeah, that makes sense. You go ahead and please have my better half. You're right that I would be mean if I denied you that.
Well, I'll tell you what, fella. I can't argue with your taste. But hey, why don't we have some beef and broccoli and talk it out? Because I want everyone to get along. I'm telling you. What am I supposed to do, hit him?
No, you're supposed to say, what the fuck are you talking about? She is a grown woman and she made a decision.
Not everybody relaxed. It's interesting. I see both. Way.
I see. But also, I do see. It's interesting because I was like, oh yeah, 100% boss. And then I was like, well, I could see what Coach is describing as its own strategy.
Yes.
Like, it's not just pure-hearted, oh, whatever, that... It's not the way I read the scene, but there have been a few things like this. But, like, I could see where Ted is thinking, this is totally fucking adversarial right now.
Yes.
How do we, like, let the air out of that?
Ted Lasso is a genius. A genius. Ted Lasso is a genius.
It's not how I read it, but it's interesting.
No, I'm saying, in general, Ted Lasso changes everyone he comes in contact with. Okay? And he has every intention of doing that with Edwin Okufo to the best of his ability. What he's not going to do is go, you know what? Hit the bricks, pal. Like, you're out of line. You're not getting Sam Obasanya. I don't give a shit how many helicopters you have. Stick them up your ass and hit the road. And don't come back. And if I catch you calling Sam Obasanya, I'm going to sue you within an inch of your life. It's not in his ethos.
I'm not saying he needs to say that, though. What I'm saying is that Rebecca just said, you're not going to make me an offer. Sam isn't going anywhere. All Ted needed to do was shut the fuck up. Just don't say anything, Ted. What you are saying is Ted read the room and said, everybody is awkward and uncomfortable. I'm going to take it upon myself to release some of the tension by making a joke about the sheep. What I'm saying is he didn't need to do that. I'm saying that he wanted it to be less awkward.
Subjectively, he didn't need to do it based on the standard you would apply to this scene.
No. saying
it's what's not objectively he doesn't. Because now that's hanging in the air. It's still just because Rebecca says no doesn't mean Okufo's going to stop. We haven't heard Okufo's response. And Ted is trying to shut this down. He's like, okay, this is like, we're not losing Sam Obasanya. I need him on at midfield. Like, there's no possible way. So he's like, all right, well, hey, I'll tell you what. Sometimes a blah, 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 whatever. He just goes into a shtick. But it's not because he's a nitwit.
Well, Well, sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm saying this is why we discuss this. You come at it from one perspective. I come at it from another. The listening audience is going to listen and they'll have their own take. And there could be a third or fourth or whatever take, or it could be different levels of the things that we're saying. But it still is. I don't see this as a closed topic. Do you think at the time when Rebecca said it, that was it? Like Okufo was going to go, okay, well, I tried going back to Ghana. I didn't read it that way.
I think that Okufo came into the office, made an offer, and Rebecca, who was the boss, who was the owner and the person in charge, said, I'm not hearing your offer. What I'm saying is that at that point, Ted didn't need to weigh in. Even if what he thought was, this conversation isn't over, even if he thought, I'm going to reduce the tension. I'm saying if Ted and Rebecca had disagreed, maybe they would need to talk about that. But Ted and Rebecca were on the same side, and Rebecca gave the answer that needed to be said.
You know what else Ted didn't need to weigh in? When Rebecca was singing in the chapel at her father's funeral, and he didn't need to weigh in.
That's entirely different. That she did need him to do that. Why do you think that she needs Ted to weigh in right now?
Who's the arbiter of that? What Ted does is weigh in. First of all, he's the coach of the team. That's his player. It's not like he's a innocent bystander. He has a vested interest in keeping Sam Obasanya on the team. And what Ted does is interject. It's part of his stratagem.
I think in both cases, and I'm going to add a third that may feel not in line, but I'll show you why I think it belongs there. Roy sitting in the stands, pissed off. And here comes Ted, and he wants to show him some video of, you know, whatever it was. And I think, so when we say, does he have to do it? I think we have to be clear. Does he have to show that video, interject here with some shit about cloning, join in on the Rickroll? In terms of being Ted, he does. Because there's discomfort or unhappiness or whatever it is, and he doesn't want that for anybody. So he's going to feel compelled, right, to make that not what's happening. I could see another version of sitting in that church, which, by the way, every other character saw, which was, this is a funeral. Someone's having a hard moment. So I'm going to just like sit here and sit in the discomfort and that being a thing. But yes. So I think Ted is always going to bring the video of the two nice animals getting along out if he feels like things aren't going in a nice
yes.
feeling direction.
Yes. So here's what I was trying to say about season one Ted versus season two Ted, in my opinion, we'll say. I think that season one Ted knew how to use kindness and meanness in order to get his points across. And I think season two Ted has fallen back on only being nice all the time, regardless. I think he let Jamie sit in some of this comfort of being yelled at in the locker room in front of his teammates because Jamie was being a prick and Ted was trying to get him in line. Ted knew that he needed to do that. And so he let it be uncomfortable. He let Jamie sit in the discomfort of that. I think he also did a similar thing with Rupert. I think that season two, Ted Lasso is doing less of the, I am going to inflict a little bit of pain in order to make things overall better. And instead saying, I am going to eliminate any amount of discomfort, regardless of whether or not it is useful.
Useful to your standards, but his whole thing is thousands upon thousands of little micro interactions. And he treats everybody the same way. Coach, one of my favorite things that Coach ever said was with regard to this. Coach does a lot of things I love. But I remember saying when he first comes in with Rebecca, the first time, pilot episode, Ted comes in and I made some comment like, oh, he doesn't consider this a small interaction. And Coach was like, I don't think Ted would consider anything as small. He would say there's no such thing as a small interaction. Like that goes back to the beginning. So it doesn't discount your position at all, boss, right? Is it needed? Like needed? Do I need to drink my own urine? No, but it's sterile and I like the taste. To quote Patches O'Houlihan from Dodgeball. Is it necessary? There's this beat. Akufo turns to Ted. He says, yeah, well, like my father used to say, a sad white man is still a white man. Ted says, word. All I'm asking for...
Sorry, before we leave this, I just need to make one last point. A part of what you're saying is... part of what you're arguing is that, according to my standards, people should know how to be mean. Or they shouldn't only be nice. I understand that. We could disagree on that. What I'm saying is that Ted's characterization and the plot points that come out of him behaving the way that he behaves all the time feel less realistic to me. This feels more like a world where Ted just gets to be Ted and everything works out well for Ted. And that makes me feel like the writing and the episodes in season two are less compelling than the ones in season one. I think that
I don't think many people would give you a fight. Yeah. They had 8 years to write the first season and 8 minutes.
And again, we have talked about that. I'm not going to try to knock them too hard. But what I'm saying is when I bring up these points about Ted acting this season, like what I'm going to do is not let anybody be uncomfortable or sad for even a minute. I'm not going to allow any of that to exist. That takes me out of the show. That you could say that like he is able to do that. That's fine. But for me, it feels like they are saying this is what he does, so everything works out just fine. And that writing doesn't do it for me. This is why I'm bringing these things up.
Yeah. No, and I'm glad you have. I'm wondering, and I think some of it is the obvious of, the first, why the sophomore album always feels like a sophomore album. So I get that part. As a character, like just sort of like taking this as like, this is text, right? Like this is our text. Part of me does wonder, as your description of it helped me to get to this, if Ted is so uncomfortable right now, just in general, that his ability to withstand any discomfort is compromised.
Oh, I'm sure.
That's super, you know what I mean? So I wonder, yes, I think you're right. Mechanically, the writing, you know, all, but I wonder if character-wise, part of what maybe we're witnessing and trying to like sort out is like, dude is off.
Yeah.
Like in turn, right? And so the like, if he could handle 100 of discomfort and he usually used to walk around at 30, that gave him 70 to work with. He's walking around at 80 now.
Yeah.
So you hit him with 70 of discomfort. He's like, whoa, we got to clear this thing up. Like we are in overflow now.
Yes.
Yeah, I think there might be something there.
And I think that that's incredibly true. But I think that also then we cannot say like Ted Lasso behaving the way that he does in this episode is a model for good emotional health that the rest of us should be trying to follow. That's the part that I don't.
We have to just agree to disagree about that.
Well, no, wait.
There's all kinds. Like for every person, for every boss that watches Ted Lasso and is looking for like the, you know, like the authenticity of what you got in season one. Mm-hmm. There's probably 25 people looking for the kindness that you've got in season one. So, like, what I'm saying is they're trying to juggle all that. And they're trying to approximate a version of Ted that accomplishes both things, and we're not going to disagree about whether or not they achieve that. The level of quality of a special. Listen, I've been harping all season two about the joke composition and how it's like a lot of rhyming without anything substance behind it. Right away, that is a complete agreement with what you're saying. In that particular case, I'm just saying in this particular case, what I was trying to get to was Ted does his thing. Kufo says a sad white man is still a white man. I don't think I understand that. Maybe someone can explain that line to me. Yeah, Coach.
Wait, which
part? A sad white man is still a white man.
I mean, he's like wherever they are on it. They still up to some white man shit.
Right. Okay.
Like,
that's what I thought.
Whatever they're doing with it. Yeah. That's all I took. Okay. I didn't think there was anything like
that. And then the next,
I guess the next line he does
is all I'm asking for is an opportunity. He goes back to his position. So that's it. I'm saying you can disagree. You can say it wasn't necessary of Ted. I think the kid took a shot and you can't fault him for, you know, being inside of who he is generally. Is it the same? Does it have the same tenacity as the excellence of the writing of the first season? Probably not, but it doesn't change the natural Tedness of the choice.
That is what I'm disagreeing with you about. I am saying that this is not season one Ted. I am saying that the emotional reality of season one is not being represented in season two. You just said you can't fault a guy for being who he is. He's a written character. I can absolutely fault him for who he is. You can change it at literally any minute if you felt like it.
Well, let me jump in because I think, I don't know if this will help, but a piece of what I'm hearing is season one, Ted, doing some similar thing, sounding the same because of where it's coming from is kind. And season two, Ted, excuse me, because it's about his discomfort, it seems on some level is nice.
Yes. Yes. I think that it seems less that he is acting intentionally in the ways that he does because he has such an understanding of human emotion that that's why he's acting this way. And in season two, it seems like he doesn't have a setting that isn't nice. If you are nice all the time, okay, that's fine or whatever. I don't consider that to be highly emotional intelligent if you cannot get into the other areas. If you are stuck being nice and only nice all of the time and can't display boss, other emotions.
Boss, that is the same. This is wonderful because you just said you are laboring under the misguided notion that hate costs me anything. I hate flows through me like a mist, right? That's the same thing for niceness for a lot of people. It doesn't cost me anything to be nice. I try to be nice to everyone.
But do I hate everything? Do I hate everything?
No.
Yeah.
Do I have modes you guys that aren't hate?
I think there's an...
Look what you're doing to our child. Look what you're doing. When mom and dad fight, look what happens to little Ted Lasso, Bishop. He has to come in and he has to put everything back together. You see what you're doing?
No, but for real, I need to go back to this real quick. What I am saying is that only operating in any emotion, if you are not able to experience a variety of emotions, I do not consider you emotionally healthy, even if you are very nice, even if you're very sweet. If you can't healthfully express anxiety, anger, sadness, depression, if you can't do any of those other things, I don't think that you're emotionally intelligent. Great. I think you're nice and that's fine. But wonderful. What I'm talking about is being able to move through them, not which one is best.
Is this another version of I'm Roy Kent and I hate everything? Right? Like
yes.
And Keely making fun of him. And I get it. It's not where I was on Ted. And it's not, I'm not all the way like that's all he can be. Like, I do think he has a great deal of emotional intelligence, but I do think you make an interesting point. And I think that's why I went for nice and kind and that distinction. Mm-hmm. Because, okay, I guess another way to look at it is this. I'm trying to think of a good example. Okay. When Ted was, that's a heck of a sports drink, young man, right? He is obviously trying to build Nate up. Like, this guy doesn't even think his name should be known. Like, I gotta, like, get this guy on his feet, right? Who's he helping in this scene when he gets into the cloning thing?
Yes.
And
thank
I would have argued he's trying to, like, take, you know, he's trying to bring the temperature down, but it's like, is he trying to bring the temperature down to help Rebecca or Kufo? I could argue he's trying to bring the temperature down because, yeesh, this is uncomfortable for me.
Yes. Yes. I think that's a really great point, one I entirely agree with. And now Caston's going to cut it from the podcast.
That's right. That's right. Let's shave it right up. I'm just going to have me making winning points the whole time. And
there you go. I don't know. It's an interesting conversation. I do think I've underestimated this particular viewing going through. I have felt more that I missed some cues that Ted's disconnect and his, like, he is dealing with something while he's doing the rest of this shit. Yeah, I don't know that I put as much weight on that in previous viewings, but this time around, like I said, some of the energy, there was someplace else where I was like, this is giving, I was walking to work. When he came in and they were talking about fashion, he's like, hey, yeah, the guys are arguing about fashion. Who's winning? Like,
yes.
He's playing the role a lot.
Yeah.
I love the role. And they love the role. Everybody loves the role. Like, that's not the part. But I do think he's playing at it a little more in some of these moments than he was in season one.
Yes. I would argue he's not nearly as present. He isn't actually processing what's happening to him. He's struggling this season. And I'm great with that. I just needed that to be, Ted is not doing Ted well right now because he is so focused. Mm-hmm. He is struggling so much himself. He is not picking up. He is not dialing into what other people are saying, what they need from him. He is saying, like, I'm going to make a joke about a sheep because I can't deal with this anymore. And that's different.
So he should, if you were in the writer's room for this, you'd have said, I advocate for him to just be silent. Right.
Either that or have.
And let his player, like, possibly be taken away.
I think that he doesn't need to say that.
Okay. But you were saying he could shut the fuck up. You were saying
he could.
Okay, so that's option A is shut the fuck up.
That's an option.
Let's say option C is cloning talk and joking around and trying to defuse the situation. What is there an option B?
He could say, I've got to agree with my boss here. We're not trading Sam. He could say, like, United Front, I'm with Richmond. We're not giving you Sam.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so I guess the moral of the story is for us to go back into the past and put you in the writer's room. Coach, what are the sure. can we get boss there? Do you have any inside
you can't. Well, in a multiverse.
Boss really is she actually multiverse. One of her the things she loves is time travel stories.
I do.
Yeah, she's really good at them. So I'm sure there's a way to do it in science fiction.
Yeah, and not in the reality that you guys live in. In the reality you live in, I already was not in the writer's room, so therefore I never could have been in the writer's room.
Right.
Mm.
You could, through a time travel mechanism, send me to an alternate, another branch of the multiverse, where I had always been in the writer's room, and therefore I was in the writer's room. But I don't fucking know those guys, so why would I want to be there? I don't care.
That part. Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Khufu says, after Ted says word, he says, all I'm asking for is an opportunity to speak to Sam. Maybe let him decide for himself. Yes?
Great move.
And Rebecca, of course, says, she's backed into a corner. What's she going to say? No?
Right. Right. Yeah, it's a great move.
She says yes. She agrees. Tightly, she says yes. That would be the line reading tightly. She says yes. And of course, because it's Disney Ted Lasso now, who's at the door? It is Sam Obisanya. Walks right in. And man alive. Well, they were just talking about his future without him. Digging a dog, boss. You believe that? He says, I hope I'm not interrupting. Perfect timing. Sam, this is Edwin Akufo. Sam walks up to him to give him a handshake. Ted says appropriately, oh, he doesn't like the shake.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then we get Abomination.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Right.
And also though, we get a look from Ted that's sort of like, my feelings are a little bit hurt, but I understand. He's sort of like, all right, I get it. I don't know how to explain it any better than that, but he turns away and you can tell he's like, wait a minute, you didn't shake my hand. And then he's like, in fairness. So anyway,
it's the exact same response to yes, coach. Absolutely, coach. The exact same response to coach. I don't want to accept this because of American imperialism. It's that.
Yes.
It's
that's like, right.
Like, yes, oh, yes, 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 yes.
Yeah. Good. Good for them. Like, good.
Yeah. Is that, fair enough. Yeah, right.
Right. Mr. Khufu would like to speak with you. I figure, we could maybe go to a museum, have something to eat. Akufo says, sure. Sam says, wonderful. After you. Okay. It's lovely to meet you all. Bye. You too. Door closes. Silence in the room. Higgins, so strange. I once wrote a play about a billionaire who took a footballer to a museum and then to dinner. Whoa. What happens in the play? Well, they get their meal for free because they found a little bit of glass in the pasta. It's just the craziest plot twist I've ever heard of in a play. It's nuts. Higgins is nuts. Keeley, lovely. She says, "Oh, she's God. I wish I could write fiction." Oh, thank you, Keeley.
That made me laugh out loud because we really did have a beat of that is not a great story. Thanks for nothing, Higgins. So to then have Keeley sort of like marvel, like, oh, you did that, was extra funny to me.
Yeah. No, I mean, again, Keeley's lovely. By and large, she approaches everybody with kindness. Very, very rarely do we see her sort of maneuver off of that path. And so she's, you know, I should revisit that work. And that's it. Okay. Well, listen, they can't all be humdingers. we're gonna
oh God.
We're gonna pick it up from here next time. It is it's I think art should make you think. And I don't think that the goal of any beautiful production is to make everybody think the same thing. And so The net result is a lot of good conversation, a lot of things that can have listening audience at home considering who's right and who's wrong. If history is a any indication, I am dead wrong and Boss is right. I look forward to her sister annihilating me on the message boards. So yeah, this is fun. I'm glad glad we did that. Thanks, Boss. Coach, where do people find you if they want to find you?
We Align. It's wealign.alignp.com. We're growing the community. Come through, check out the resources, the classes, all of it. We're building. We're building. Come build with us.
It's great. And Boss, what about you?
Blue Sky is now open, so anybody could get in and find me there. That is Dumily Chambers, also at Threads, which is emily.chambers.31. Eventually massacring Castleton and the community board. So community space, you could come watch that. I also, talked about a new show, Ghosts, the UK version, enjoying it very much, strangely attracted to a caveman, which is fitting for me. Makes a lot of sense, actually.
I'm glad that's happened for you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's what you deserve, Boss.
You ruined credit.
Yeah, yeah. He doesn't even know what it is, and he's going to do it.
All right, great. Well, thank you, everyone. Thank you for joining us. Thanks for taking the time to walk through Ted Lasso Season 2, Episode 11. This has been Part 2 of Midnight Train to Royston. We will pick up Part 3 next time. Until then, please tip your librarians. Actually, no, I don't know if you can tip librarians. I don't think they do the tips in the library. But you can be kind to your librarians. Library staff, God, they're nice. Just like everyone, never met a bad librarian all these years. I'm sure they're out there, but luckily I haven't bumped into them. So support your local libraries. And please keep supporting the written word, especially as everything becomes just robbery and just robber baron computers approximating everybody else's language. So yeah, please join us on that and continue to support the show by reviewing and rating and liking and telling a friend and all that stuff that people do. We really appreciate it. It means a lot for us. We'll be back next time with Part 3. And until then, we are
Richmond.
Till we
fuck Toby Keith
die.
Too.
Wait, what? Till we what? I didn't hear what you said.
I said fuck Toby Keith too.
Oh fuck! Oh Toby. Wow. Okay.
Sorry, man.
I'm gonna have to do. I'm blissfully unaware. So okay. Looks like I'm gonna have to do a. I'll be Googling after this. Thanks, everybody. Mm-hmm. We'll see you next time.
The TEDcast is a joint venture between Pajiba and The Antagonist. Visit us at pajiba.com and antagonistblog.com.